It's The Record on KUOW. I'm David Hyde.
I'm Marcy Silman. It's a bitter white powder derived from plants, leaves, and seeds. It gives us energy and it makes us feel good. Not cocaine. I'm talking about caffeine. Most Americans ingest it every day, but it's also a powerful drug with real consequences. Long known as the kick in coffee, soda, and energy drinks, caffeine today has found its way into vitamins, pain relievers, even gum. Journalist Murray Carpenter takes a closer look at the common drug we take for granted in his new book. It's called Caffeinated: How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. Our colleague Ross Reynolds spoke to Murray about the book.
Let's go right to your subtitle here. How does it help us? How does caffeine help us?
Well, it helps in the ways that I think most of us are so familiar with, especially if you're a daily caffeine user. It makes you feel alert. It alleviates any sense of fatigue. It even elevates your mood and just sort of makes you feel better. One of the things that is a surprise to a lot of people is it even can help athletic performance quite a bit.
So how does it hurt us? Your subtitle says how our daily habit hurts us.
Well, the most obvious thing, and I think anyone who is familiar with caffeine is aware of this, is it can really mess with your sleep cycles. So for most of us, if we take too much caffeine too late in the day, we'll have that feeling where we're lying awake in bed, thoughts racing, heart thumping, thinking, you know, I shouldn't have had that cup of coffee. And so, you know, this can be significant for a lot of people. And for some people seem to be immune to this effect. But for others, even a small amount of caffeine early in the day can really affect their sleep. And since insomnia is a pretty major problem in our society, I think this is something that deserves more understanding.
And it certainly does hook us. In fact, you point out that caffeine withdrawal has been recognized since last year as a syndrome by the American Psychiatric Association.
Yes, and this is interesting. One of the interesting things about how it hooks us is that it takes probably less caffeine than most of us think to really get hooked. And when I say hooked, I mean you would experience some withdrawal symptoms if you stop abruptly. As little as 100 milligrams a day. And now this would be equivalent of, say, 6 ounces of moderate strength coffee, a couple of cups of tea, 3 caffeinated colas. That's all it takes for most adults to experience withdrawal symptoms if they stop abruptly. So yeah, it really can hook us pretty quickly.
You point out that one reason it's kind of hard to get a handle on caffeine is that we don't really know how much we've ingested. In fact, you propose a measure of that.
Yes, the SCAD. This is a standard caffeine dose, and it's my way of trying to standardize and quantify our caffeine consumptions. For what I consider a SCAD is 75 milligrams of caffeine, and this is roughly equivalent to one shot of espresso, a Red Bull, 5 ounces of moderately strong coffee, or about 20 ounces of Diet Coke. So the reason I propose this measure is that I think so many of us are unaware of how much caffeine we take daily and in what different forms. And until we get a handle on how it affects us at what levels, it's really hard to optimize our caffeine use. And I mean, optimize its benefits and minimize any harm that it might be causing.
I'm talking to Murray Carpenter about his new book, Caffeinated: How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. So, Murray, when you figured out how much caffeine you were actually ingesting every day, what was your reaction?
Well, I found that I was, you know, I'm in the range of 4 or 5 SCADs a day. It's 300 to 400 milligrams. And that's actually about the amount that most people who drink coffee daily tend to be in this range. It's probably a moderate to heavy coffee drinker. I did slightly dial back my caffeine consumption as I reported this book, just in talking to a researcher who's suggesting that I may get more benefits and less of any possible negative effects by just cutting it back. So I probably cut back about 25%, but I still, you know, I'm 3 or 4 cups of coffee a day is my habit.
Why do you think that researcher told you that ingesting less caffeine would be beneficial?
So as with any drug, probably taking the smallest amount to give you the desired effect would be optimal. And because caffeine can be addictive, often the first bit of your dose that you're taking is basically an amount to alleviate withdrawal, if that makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
So again, reducing the amount of caffeine that you use is one way that you can optimize the benefit. And that's not to say, you know, down to zero, because for a lot of people, I think we find the right amount that works for us. And I think most people are in that category. But it's easy, I think, to take more than you need.
Now, caffeine is kind of regulated by the Federal Food and Drug Administration. You point out it is a powerful drug. But you also say that the FDA has not really figured out how to regulate it. What's the problem here?
Yeah, and this has been a problem for 100 years, really. One of the things I was surprised to discover in reporting the book is that 100 years ago, there was a dramatic trial pitting the federal government and the predecessor to the FDA, the Bureau of Chemistry, against the Coca-Cola company over the addition of caffeine to Coca-Cola. FDA has, they do regulate caffeine in prescription drugs and in over-the-counter medications, such as NoDose and Vivarin, but they don't regulate the caffeine in naturally occurring products such as coffee or tea. Obviously, that would be a challenge. But more interestingly, they really don't yet have a handle on how to regulate the caffeine in energy drinks. And so the bottlers of energy drinks and soft drinks, for that matter, are not even required to list the amount of caffeine that they're blending into these products. And I think that's the least information that a consumer needs to make an educated decision on what caffeinated products they should be consuming.
I guess I don't understand why the Food and Drug Administration doesn't more tightly regulate what goes into energy drinks.
Well, they're now investigating this, and they did hold a big workshop on this last summer. And they're in the process of formulating some regulations. So I think they're basically, it's a slow process. How about, I think we should put it that way, a slow deliberative process. And if we look at what other regulatory agencies around the world have done, I think you'll see, you can probably see a template for what FDA might do. And in Canada, in the European Union, and soon in the United Kingdom, they're requiring not only that energy drinks list the amount of caffeine that's in each serving, but that they also have an advisory label for people who are children, pregnant women, anyone sensitive to caffeine. That these are all labeling requirements in other places, and I think we'll probably see something like that come out of this this process that FDA is going through now.
Murray, you say part of the problem here is that the food processors are moving ahead so quickly to find new uses of caffeine that the federal regulations are always playing catch up.
It's true. It's true. I mean, I think it would have been hard to imagine even 10 years ago just how abundant energy drinks have become, and the little energy shots, which are everywhere now. Again, this is a very recent phenomenon. And they pose special challenges for regulators because
that's like
for
the 5-hour energy drink, those little tiny little containers that promise you all kinds of alertness. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, exactly. And they're basically just a more concentrated sort of an energy drink with less water, essentially. So they pose a lot of challenges. And then you add on top of that, we have now caffeinated gum, caffeinated energy bars. Caffeinated, there's even a topical caffeinated spray that I got recently. There's caffeinated inhalers.
Wait a minute. A caffeinated spray? What's that?
Yeah. You spray it on your skin, and it's somehow you're supposed to absorb the caffeine. Now, I'll say I haven't tried it yet, so I can't guarantee it's effective. But again, I think the uses of caffeine are only limited by the imaginations of the people who are formulating these new products.
Murray, you call Seattle-based Starbucks a standout among modern caffeine hucksters. Ouch. Why do you call them that?
Well, I mean, maybe that's a little strong. So Starbucks is a company that has really made its fortune on caffeine. And I think, like so many other companies that really have built their empires on caffeine, and Coca-Cola is another one, they really have not been eager to talk about the role of caffeine in their sales and marketing. And let me give you an example. In Howard Schultz's book Onward, which was an interesting book, he uses the word caffeine one time, and that's in a sort of derisive reference to diner coffee. Now, you know, I think Starbucks, it's safe to say they would never have gotten beyond Seattle if not for the caffeine. So it would be more honest to have a more open and thoughtful discussion about the role of caffeine in their sales and marketing.
Well, it sounds like it's a terrific ingredient if you're someone who's trying to sell people drinks or food because it is addictive and it provides an instant buzz. And is it inexpensive? Is there a kind of a financial incentive to add caffeine to more products?
There absolutely is. So yeah, it's a heck of an ingredient. And you know, just to put it to get a sense of the scale, the soft drink industry in the U.S. is worth more than $70 billion annually. Coffee, more than $30 billion. Tea, probably another $10 billion. Energy drinks, several billion on top of that. So we're talking well more than, you know, $110 billion in retail sales annually. So yes, it's a great business to be in. And yeah, it's a product that the drug caffeine not only makes you feel good, but it reinforces your purchasing habits, which is to say that if you offer someone a product with caffeine or one without, they're more likely to choose the caffeinated product the next time. It has a lot of commercial value.
Yeah, it sure does. Just like the drug dealers, they're the first ones free.
Yeah.
Journalist Murray Carpenter, he takes a look at the common drug we kind of take for granted in his new book, Caffeinated, How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thanks for having me on.